I'm Sylvia, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm going to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Now, I noticed that in the big book, when it talks about into a solution, in the solution, that it tells us that there's certain things that we do here, like finding a God of our understanding. There's certain things that we have to do in order to stay sober. But it also goes on to say that it takes a lot of different ways to get sober. It mentions that there's 42 stories, and those stories are very important because everybody's story is different. You know, what happens to us is that sometimes we go into meetings and we figure, you know what, I don't want to look to that person. I have nothing in common. So what I want you to do is, I'm not going to quote the big book. I'm not even going to talk very much about the steps today. The only thing I'm going to do is tell you my story and what happened to me and how I got sober through the Alcoholics Anonymous program. Now, I very seldom ever tell anybody about my past. I believe that Mary and Bernard are about the only ones that know a little bit about me. But when I was a little girl, I grew up in some projects on the south side of Bakersfield. And we were so poor. In fact, I told a girl, I said, did you see Slumdog Millionaire? And she said, yes. And I said, that's the environment I come from. I said, there was an outhouse, and my little brother and my sister, here we were going out through the back with a little flashlight. And it was kind of spooky where we grew up, and my parents drank a lot. My father was an alcoholic. My mother drank. Everybody drank. But the thing is that when you're raised in where the family values seem so bizarre to others, to me they're normal because that's the only thing I knew. And I'm the oldest of five children, so I had a lot of responsibility. And we're all living in a one-bedroom house. And this went on for years. And I can remember one time walking outside and the little boys in my neighborhood telling me, little girl, why don't you go home and put a dress on? And I thought, well, I would if I had one, but I didn't tell him. But I know these things were to stay with me in the coming years, they would have an effect on me. And so I think by the time my mother was getting ready to have her fifth child, we moved across town to a two-bedroom house with a functioning staff facility. And I thought, this is wonderful. And then I was a new girl in town. I mean, we're on the north side of town. And so all of a sudden, I had all this attention. And I thought, maybe things are going to be better. And there was a little church down the street. And I was already used to running and hiding in the church. And we had so many family secrets that I learned to keep secrets at a very young age. Did what my father, you know, my mother was doing. I did. My father was always wrecking the cars. I just didn't want anybody to even know what was going on in my house. So we didn't have very many friends, so people would come by anyway. Okay, so where did this take me? I didn't drink. I didn't want to have anything to do with alcohol, and I didn't want to be around anyone that drank or smoked. I made up my mind. I already have my established moral values. I already know what's going on. I figured that by the time I'm 7 years old, I'm going to be the next Virgin Mary or Joan of Arc, one of the two. I thought, and there's just no way I'm ever going to do anything wrong. I didn't steal, and I didn't lie, and I went to church, and I confessed every week. All right. So then what happened to me? I went into junior high, and I told you I was a student body president. I excelled in my grades. I was the most popular girl. I had the most popular boyfriend. Didn't drink. Didn't have anything to do with people that did. And everybody around me drank. Okay. Time's going by, but I'm still living in the barrio. And so I'm still within a group of people that are just like me. So I still don't know what the real world holds. Like, we didn't drink coffee at home. So I haven't even been introduced to coffee yet. I learned to make my own clothes. So now, nobody could tell me, little girl, go put a dress on. I learned how to sew, so I started making my own clothes. Then I got to high school, and by then, almost all the kids I've been going to school with had dropped out. So I found myself a minority going to this high school. And I was able to compete and go through school, and I didn't drink. You'll step to whatever value system I had that was in place, and I was going to live this way. What happened to me? I got married, but I really wanted to marry the boy across the alley from me. He had been the altar boy, and he was my love. But our parents said that he was not right for me. So I went ahead and married someone else. I think that it was to bother me for the years to come. Anyway, I got married, and I thought I'd just have a family and stay home. Now I could continue going to college on my own. But my husband wanted me to go to work. And I thought, well, who's going to hire me? Nobody's going to hire me. I can't do anything. Right? So now I bought a dress. Probably my first store-bought dress. And I went and applied for a job. This lady told me after taking the test, she interviewed me. She says, she called me up one day. She says, we're coming over to investigate your home. She says, we're thinking of hiring you. At the time, I didn't think nothing of it, but they came over to my house to investigate me. And I thought it was probably because they didn't have anyone like me working for them. So they hired me. So now I have all this money. So now I can buy clothes, I can buy shoes. All of a sudden, I figured I've arrived. My world's going to be different. I'm doing pretty good for a while. Then my girlfriend says, I'm going to be 21 today, and I'm going down the street to have a drink after work. Would you join me? I said, sure, I will. So I went down there, and we had a few drinks. Well, the bar that was down there by where I worked was full of PG&E guys, and I worked in a construction yard where all of the technicians were inside next to me. There was just glass that separated us. Construction was there, all of the installers, slicers, everybody was in our yard, some of the engineers. So anyway, we went out there to have a few drinks. Man, that alcohol, I changed just like that. I was 9 years old again, and the new girl in town, and I thought, this is fun. So I drank that night, and I thought, I'll be okay. Then they wanted us to go out and drink again, so I joined them. My husband couldn't cope with this. So I got beat up a few times, and I thought, well, I can't cope with this. I can't go out and have a drink or have a good time, so maybe the husband should go. So we got rid of him. All right. Then my life starts to go on, and I'm still drinking. So I find another man. And I thought, you know what? This is the one I really want. And I thought, he looks like Clint Eastwood, and he's got everything I want. He's got money. He's handsome. He has no children. There's no baggage. So off we go. All right. Something was wrong with me. I tell him, I'm coming home after I get through bowling up here by 10 o'clock. And I never get there. And then I tell him again, I'll be home in a few hours. And I never got there. I was having to stop by the bar. Why? When I didn't want anything else in my life except this one person. I didn't realize that there was something strong inside of me. I want alcohol more than I wanted anything else. So this brings me to the next stage. I'm getting to the point now where I've gotten married again, and it's still not working out. So I thought, you know what? He decides that he's interfering in my life. Maybe it's time for him to go anyway. I'll be fine. But I didn't know that it was going to take me another 10 years to get over it. And I drank. And I thought the best thing to do is maybe find someone else that'll be a codependent. So I found another man that drank just like me, and he was in law enforcement. And I thought, I'm doing the right thing. I've got to be a moral person, because after all, now I marry everybody I go to sleep with. So I'm going on and on. And so anyway, I meet this other guy, and he's an ABC man, so what they do is they go out to bars every night. This is a job. So there I go. Every night we hit those bars. Every night. Before I knew it, I was drinking 7 days a week. Then I got scared when I started drinking in the morning. I knew I had a problem. But still, I didn't stop. So I thought, you know what, this guy's giving me a bad time, and I don't think I should marry him. So why don't I find another man to get rid of this man, and so I can continue to get to drink. So I found a guy that is from Mother Navy, and he drank just like me. So off we go. Still trying to get over that other first one, that one I told you about. Still can't get over. No, you guys might not relate to the story, but remember, relate to the, it's the feelings. The feelings are the same. I was obviously a very needy person, still emotionally immature, self-centered to the core, selfish, and suffering from grandiosity. Somewhere, someplace, I wanted to be somebody. So anyway, I find this other guy. He kind of sticks around for a while, and we start drinking together. Then he gets a drunk driving charge, and he doesn't want to drink anymore. And I thought, So about that time, we're 1981. I've been drinking now since that first divorce, probably since 67, 64, something like that. I was already about 24 years old when I started drinking. So anyway, I get a drunk driving charge. But it's okay, I've gotten rid of him. I can keep drinking, and I like the freedom. Nobody can stop me from drinking. Not only that, but I had 3 children. And nobody was taking care of the children. I was just drinking and working. And I had this wonderful job. I thought I was just dead. Now they're giving me another job where I'm out collecting information, analyzing equipment, and giving it to the engineers. And I mean, I'm a functioning drunk. I go to work every day. So, by 1982, I got another drunk driving charge. 2 months later, I got another drunk driving charge. Now I'm a falling down drunk. I can't even drink. I get to the point where even a few drinks, I'm out of control. I can't function. And so with that drunk driving ticket, they told me they were going to take my license away from me. And I thought, now what am I to do? And I thought, I've got to find another enabler. So I found a guy from Fresno. And they like to drink a little bit, so I thought, that would be a good partner. So he said, I'll take you everywhere you want to go. And I said, fine. So we're off and running now. So we drank for a while. And there's tongues going by. Then just as I get my license back, I get another drunk driving charge. I just had my license taken from me. That's why I'm finding all these enablers. Now I've got another drunk driving charge. And this time the law says, now it's 1984, and the law says, you're going to have to do time. And I said, time? I've got 22 years with this corporation. They're not going to hold my job. What's going to happen to me? Besides that, I'm just telling everybody, I was afraid to go to jail because then everybody would see the roots and find out that I wasn't a natural light-haired person. And then they're going to make me get rid of my false eyelashes, and I could go through the whole kingdom going through my head. But I wasn't thinking about anything else. I was just thinking about how I looked. And so then what I did was, I was kind of trying to put myself together, but I was having a hard time because I knew I was going to have to do time. Now, there aren't any work furlough programs for women in the Bakersfield or Kern County area. The only place that had one was Santa Barbara County and Alameda County. So I scouted around, and I found Alameda County. They had a sheriff's office there that would take me in, but I would have to pay them. I said, fine. So I found some way to arrange to get a job transfer so I could hide out there at the sheriff's office and continue working. So I got a transfer, and I continued on my journey. But before I did that, I had a 13-year-old son. He didn't know his father because he had gotten a divorce a long time ago. I go to him, and I tell him, Roy, I have to go away, and I have to go to Oakland because it's the only place I can find a work furlough program. Would you raise your son? He's been a bachelor. He was smarter than me. He never got married again. He says, well, you can stay here for a little while until you get settled. And I said, fine. So you this little 13-year-old boy with a trunk. The guy still drinks. So off I go. And I thought, what am I going to do? And I turned myself, finally one day I get to work and I report to Oakland and I'm at work and I ask my boss to turn me into the sheriff's office and he does and he falls apart and I don't know what to do and I'm scared. So I go see my doctor, his doctor. And I asked him to please help me. My hair was falling out. I had bald spots. I couldn't drink. I was afraid I was going to wind up in the gutter. I was living in a motel room at Jack London Square. And I thought, there's just no hope for me. I don't have a car. I don't have a home. I've left it in Bakersfield. I bought another home in Fresno. It was there. The cars were all wherever they were at, put away someplace. And there I am alone, living in San Francisco, working in Oakland, and turning myself in every day. Every night. Every night. And this went on. And the one of the rules that they had stipulated for me was that I couldn't leave the county for a year. So I couldn't see my family for a year. So I lived up there by myself while I took care of what I had to take care of. But just prior to that, when I went in crying to this doctor, he told me, well, when you go to your motel room, he says, I'll find some help for you. So I went back to my motel room, and there was a call that night, and some woman from some rehab called me, and she said, don't drink tonight, Sylvia. We have help available for you. And within a few weeks after that, I turned myself into a rehabilitation center in Fresno, Holy Ark. It's an intensive rehab, and I am so grateful that I did it because it was to change my life. I'm 44 years old, couldn't drink anymore, on the verge of just about losing. The last thing to go to is your job. I probably would have died if I'd lost my job. So then what I did was I went to rehab, came out, finished doing my time, and eventually a year later I came back. By the time I got back, this is how come I know that you never really lose anything. I came back and I asked my husband, I'm ready to take my son back. He says, well, you don't have to. He's fine here with me. I'm willing to take care of him. And my son has been there for the last half, 25 years, never left it. So, you know, sometimes I think that things happen for a reason. Maybe the father needed his son more than I did. Maybe that's the way it was meant to be. My son didn't really want to leave his hometown of Bakersfield. I never went back. So sometimes I feel like, and he's always in my life today, so you never really lose anything unless it didn't belong to you to begin with. That's how come I don't get into material things. I figure that if you didn't own the car, well then, of course somebody else might take it. If you didn't own the house, someone is bound to take it. And we really don't own people. So anyway, as time went by, I began to grow up a little bit. I came out of the rehab, and it was to change my life. That brings me to the next stage. Life started to change. I had quit drinking. My ex-husband told me, Sylvia, you quit drinking, but you haven't changed. You haven't changed a bit. And I said, what do you mean I haven't changed? He says, well, you're still behaving the same way and doing the same thing. And one day I was driving this fancy car, and I still hadn't given me back my license. And I came to an intersection, and it was in a shopping center. And this motorcyclist dropped his motorcycle. And then I got a phone call at my job telling me that the Fresno Police Department was looking for me because I had been charged with hit and run. I hit and run? I didn't hit anybody. So what I'm going to tell you about change is that I wish I could tell you that I may have had a psychic change when I did my fourth step. I quit drinking. But the behavior has to change. I have to change. And that's going to be a process. So, and I think that changing comes from the things that you do. And the best example that I can give you right now is the day that I finally showed up in court. I said, I was trying to get my insurance plan to just pay this guy off. And he said, Sylvia, I know you. You didn't hit him and leave. Something else is wrong here. I didn't want to know. I didn't have a driver's license. So I showed up and I went to court. I told the judge exactly what had happened. And the judge ruled in my favor. I knew I had to change. I couldn't be living by the same old rules. I had to get back to what AA as its outline. I had to change And then it just, and then I noticed something else about me. I was a codependent. I thought I was selecting codependent. This isn't true. I was a codependent. I had, and I didn't know that I was thinking over my children. I have a son at the time that was getting into trouble, and he had gone to jail, and I remember thinking to myself, they called me and they told me that they were going to report him because he had stolen a television. And I said, please don't report him. I'll go buy you a TV. I'll replace that TV. So then I go to France, to Bakersfield, and I give this lady a TV. She says, it's not big enough. And I said, what? So I run back and I buy her a bigger TV. I called my daughter and I said, you know what? I need some help here and I wish you could do something about it. Go talk to this lady. And she says, Mother, are you crazy? She says, I haven't even begun to practice law. I'll be disbarred before I even start. Don't even talk to me anymore. So here I am going crazy, trying to save it. I call this a $75 TV saga because it took so long for me to let go. I have to understand that he has to pay the price. But I still wouldn't let go. Every time I got into trouble, I still wanted to drink, and I was hurting inside. So what I did the next time was, he stole my car, stole all my jewelry. Remember enough time. See? And he was out on a run. So I thought, what am I going to do? And I said, well, call the parole officer. Now my stomach went upside down. I got so sick. I felt so bad. You don't know how much it hurts to let your children go. You know how much it hurts to turn them in. I knew I didn't want him to hurt anybody else, nor himself. But once again, it took him in. And then this last time, then he came out again. And then this last time when he got picked up for, and I knew that he was going to go back under 3 strikes, you're out. I didn't panic that much. I was already learning how to let go. But I couldn't fix it. I can't do it. And so, and his father still panicked. He said, you know, so please don't convince me to hire him an attorney and everything. But anyway, he'll be coming out in a year. In fact, I just came back from Susanville. The reason I went to Susanville to see him is because a lot of the inmates are being transferred out of state. And most of the guys that he's in prison deal with have just been transferred to Arizona. So I thought, if I don't get up there right now, how am I going to see him? So I made it a point to drive all the way up there this past weekend. Those are the things that I must do for me. But as far as letting him go, yes. But it's been a long process. And that's what I'm trying to tell you. I'm the one that has to change. He hasn't changed yet. And that's exactly my point. Other people haven't changed, but I have. I follow the rules now. I haven't had a moving violation for 24 years. Isn't that strange that that coincides in my sobriety? I haven't had more than one relationship in 24 years. Isn't that strange? It wasn't the men. The problem was me. It's always been me. But I recognize that now. And the other thing I was going to tell you is that it's only about the 13-year-old boy being reunited with his father. Okay, I've had him. Okay, so when I came out of rehab, I went to find him on the streets of Bakersfield. He was living with somebody. He'd run away from his dad. And I told him to come home. I put him in a rehabilitation center. So I found out there was a place called the Renaissance. I believe it was in Fresno at the time. So we managed to put him in there for 30 days. He didn't want to come home, so we found enough money to keep him there another 30 days. And that's the guy that I think Derek was asking me about earlier. Where's Derek? Derek's in here somewhere. Anyway, he said that he just wouldn't stop drinking. And so when we found more money, and he was there another 30 days, 60 days of rehabilitation, and the years have gone by, and he still drinks. I can't save him either. It hurts me when he calls me and he tells me he's just rolled his vehicle. It hurts me when they pick him up and he goes to jail. Is there something I can do now? The way I see it is, I've been sober for 24 years. They have seen me sober longer than they saw me drunk. And I have told them, they see what I do. They know where I go and how I stay sober. All I can do is lead them, but I can't force them to drink. You can bring the horses to water, but you can't force them to drink until they get very thirsty. And as soon as they do, you'll be ready. And that brings me to another point where if I also have, I used to wonder why all of these things happened to me. I thought, you know, I'm basically a decent human being, and I thought, how come I had to go to jail and my sister didn't? She got her fourth gun drive and charged about the same time. She worked for the county in Kern County. And later on when I got well and I came into this area where I was just in San Joaquin Valley, I noticed that my sister kept drinking. And nobody wanted to talk to me in the family. Nobody wanted to have anything to do with me. But I stayed sober. That's where my sister is today. She's dead. She's dead from a wet brain. And it's terrible. It's terrible to see someone so young and brilliant go like that. And it hurts to see her set up in prison. And it hurts to see the other one drinking. But I know that as long as I know this program works, and if I can make it, I know others can. And that's all I can possibly do, is impress upon you guys about how important it is to change. And it comes from the things that you do. If I hadn't gone before that judge and taken responsibility for the position I put myself in, I wouldn't have started to change. If I hadn't started to do the right thing instead of blaming others, I had to change. There's so many things. If I hadn't turned my son in that day, I'd still be hanging on, still crying about it, going to meetings and still crying about it. I can't go on like that. That's no way to live. That is not what God wanted for me. He wants me to be a happy, joyous, free person. And the only way I can do that is to learn to let go. I think that's one of the hardest things that I've watched among alcoholics, is to let go. To learn to let go of things that you've never had any control over anyway. Things that never really belonged to us. And to learn to let go of those that you've loved at one time and aren't here anymore. Whether they're not here physically, and they're just here spiritually. The thing is that I honestly believe that love is never lost. I don't care how much love you give somebody, it's never lost. I have no regrets for all the people that I've loved. And I'm just glad that I have the ability to continue to feel that way today. Thank you. And I'm an alcoholic, and this is a good question. When I got back from San Francisco, I can tell you this part. The reason I'm so grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous is because if it hadn't been for Alcoholics Anonymous, I wouldn't have been able to finish that working career in San Francisco. I continued to live up there, and I stayed there until it was over, which means that I stayed there for 5 to 7 years without my family. And I made it. And I didn't have a car. I didn't have a license. And I made it. So I'm telling you that you can make it with or without your family. And so when I came back, I knew that the relationship that I had been in, the man I was married to, my enabler, it was basically based on alcohol. But once I quit drinking, we had nothing in common. We grew apart. He was climbing this ladder and I was climbing that one. But I knew that I was not going to live without AA. Nobody was going to keep me from AA. I finally found something that worked for me. And I met a man that's been sober a long time. And today I think he's going to have to be sober 37 years. And he's been my... Put that one behind you. So that's why I met you, Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew that, I really believe this too, that a spiritual woman will find a spiritual man. And vice versa. And if we don't have that, I don't know how kind of a relationship you can possibly build. It'll always be strange. You need to have a relationship where the horses are pulling the cart at the same pace, and in front of the cart, not behind it. So I honestly believe that women, If you find a church, this good, beautiful church, a way of living, you will find someone like you. But I just can't understand anybody staying in a place where it's a constant battle. Because I know it's hard to let go. I know. I just told you how hard it was for me to let go of anything. Anything. It's painful. But once I got past the first hurdle, I was able to start to change. And I needed to do that. I needed to change within me. Because nobody else can change me. And the only way to do it is by the actions that I take. Okay. Did I answer your question?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I did.
Did you go to Al-Anon as well as AA for your issues with your son?
Yes, I did. I had to go to Al-Anon because after my all these programs wouldn't work for my younger son, he came to my house and he thought he was kind of cool and he got my Corvette. He took off in it. And he said he was going to go out and buy some new shoes because he got a new job. But guess what? He stopped to drink, came around the corner, cops saw him, followed him to my house, followed him right into the garage, walked into the house and got him out of there and pounded my vehicle. And so then they sent him to PAR. PAR says that if I'm going to participate in their program, I have to go to Al-Anon. So that's how I got started, because of my voice. But the best thing that ever happened, so far is a good program. It's the best thing that they can possibly do for the parents sitting out there and supporting their children. They have to, parents don't realize what codependent we are. We really are. I am. Any other questions? Okay, another thing I didn't tell you is that I used this program to finish my working career. By the time I got through, I told you I'd been living up there for about 7 years. By 1990, I was through, and I retired, and I haven't worked since. So this is a wonderful program. And look how old I was when I got here. 44 years old, and I've been sober 24 years. I'm getting old. And I'll tell you something else too. People talk about the only thing I can tell you about relapse is that I never found it necessary, and I think it's because I didn't want to do any more damage. I couldn't afford to take any more chances. It would be like a man that's diagnosed with diabetes and he says, I just feel a little bit different, but I don't think I should live without sugar. I still want my sugar. I wait until it gets worse. You don't wait until you get you're going blind or you can't hear or what else happens to that? You don't lose your foot. I think that if you know you've got a problem, maybe the sooner I get started on working on it, the better off I am. At least that's just the way I see things. And still, you'll see it. Any other questions? Any of you men back there? I just want you guys to know that your mama cares. Somebody loves you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sophia. Let's hand another hand for Sophia. I had a few minutes to kill, so I would like to take a minute to say happy birthday to somebody I consider a friend, and maybe I can get her up to say a few words for 3 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. Sandy.
Since I've been here, my father's died in this program, and I didn't come here for myself. I came here for all the wrong reasons, and I'm not saying anybody else should do it, but I just always knew I was an alcoholic, and I never, ever dreamt I would come to Alcoholics Anonymous. This was not on my agenda. You know, like I said, I was waiting to kill myself, doing everything I could to do my best to kill myself, and God had a different plan. And I always thought God was really pissed off at me until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I realized that He wasn't pissed off at me. I had just closed the door on Him. I try to do the best I can. I came with somebody else to help them, and I was blessed because I sat there long enough, front and center, down at the Alana Club, and listened to people until finally a gentleman got up and started talking about this radio station. And I just love this man. His name is Gary Toon. And I just sat there one day and he was talking about this radio station, and it's called KFUCK. And he was talking about the man, talking, and his sponsor had told him, he said, "Well, what do you want to listen to that station?" He said, "Well, I don't know what to do about it." And he said, "Well, change the station." And that's when I started listening. And I was blessed because I had people like Jim come up and tell me that, you know, "You're doing okay, kid, just hang in there, you'll be okay." And I listened to a lot of people. I've been blessed. And if you just give this program a chance. And if you just take a little bit of time and put half this much of what you did out there to get you where you were at, where you wanted to be loaded or whatever you want to do, if you put that into yourself and put that into this big book and try, just even try, half-assed try, because that's what I did. Then you start listening and you see the similarities instead of the differences. You just start taking it one day at a time. That's the only way you can do it. And the next thing you know, it's like diving in a pool, and you come up and you're drenched with this stuff, and you realize that life is so much better, and you want more, and you want more. And if you don't want the program right now, then I do, like we heard a speaker say one time here, and my husband says it, I hope you get desperate, really desperate, and you get to the point where you've got desperation, and then you will want the program. You will do the program, and you'll have a good life. And you're blessed that you're young, because you have got, you have got so much to look forward to. I can't even tell you. You can't even imagine. Because I had never dreamt that my life would change to the way it's changed. And I owe it all to Alcoholics Anonymous. And with that, I'll keep coming back. My name is Sandra. Thank you.